Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Newport Avenue. This is episode 24, and I am always Real Evil Genius, or otherwise known as Jason. With me tonight, I have my regular co-hosts, Charles L. Johnson, or Teferi.
Yeah, Teferi.
I knew it was something about Delver and Teferi.
You have to. They're two of the greatest blue cards.
Yep. And then, of course, we also have Noyan with us.
Hello.
Yep. Also with us tonight, we have Brewport member and recent top 16 from SCG Baltimore Standard Open, Joe Janik.
Hello.
You can find him at Dr. Knuckles on Twitter. And also with us, we have the member of Team Legit, editor extraordinaire, and whiskey connoisseur, Justin DZ.
Ahoy, ahoy.
So tonight we're going to talk about some Standard and some Legacy, as those are the formats we just played this past weekend at SCG Baltimore, along with some other minor things, maybe, if we want to talk about them. But first of all, we'll just talk about how, you know, it's been a little bit since we've recorded, probably about, you know, almost, I think it's actually a little over 2 months since our last episode.
Yeah.
We all had a lot of, each of us that are on the cast, being me, Noyan, and Charles, each had something basically going on in our personal lives that kept us away from recording. Most of that is behind us, and we'll be back to recording regularly, you know. So hopefully every week, maybe once every 2 weeks, but you know, you'll get your dose of Brewport. So, okay. With that, let's just jump right into Standard. Let's see here. So it looks like there was about half of the top 32 ends up being Black Red Zombies this past weekend.
Boo!
And I see sitting here at 16th place happens to be our very own Joe Janik playing Black Red Zombies.
Good job, man.
Thanks.
Yep. So, Joe, why did you choose Zombies over anything else?
Well, it was a combination of feeling comfortable with Black Aggro decks and card availability. I didn't really have any of the blue shock lands available to me, so I could just jump into Zombies without much trouble. And, yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with the Black Aggro deck. I top aided with Infect last year, so I figured why not.
Okay. I mean, I didn't know if it was like just like, so it wasn't necessarily a metagame choice, more just a, this is what I have to play.
Well, I feel like I could beat any mirror match with Zombies. I feel pretty confident in playing the deck. So I knew most of the field was going to be Zombies because of the two GPs. So it was fine. I didn't know how it was against Pant or anything, but
seems to not have mattered that much.
No, I didn't even play Pant.
So what matchups did you play, Joe?
I played two or three green-white. I played the Mirror, Reanimator, Grixis Control, oddly enough. And I played against Ollie on Trazi.
Ah.
Yeah, that was all my losses.
So was the Grixis Control early on in the tournament?
No, that was round 6.
Oh, shit. Wow.
Yeah.
Was that okay. Your first loss or your second?
The Grixis guy was my second one.
Yeah, okay. You played Ollie, what, round 4?
Round 4, yes.
Yeah. You were on camera?
No, we were off camera.
You were off camera, okay.
I haven't been on camera yet.
Oh, Noyan and I have you beat there.
Yeah, it's a sad day when Wes Shaw beats us to be playing on camera with Turbo Fog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Turbo Fog gets the top deck, not, you know, a person having all, you know, an all foreign deck, even though it's called American.
but yeah, so, I mean, looking at the list, there seems to be two two sects of Black Red Zombies. There is the version that is running more like the GP winning list, which is like the Thundermaw Hellkites, the Hell Riders, and the Falkenrath Aristocrats, and just a bunch of aggro guys, and more removal and burn. And then there's the version that is running Bloodthrone Vampire as a sort of engine in and of itself when combined with Gravecrawler and Blood Artist and other things, and like specifically Mark of Mutiny or just any sort of mark effects to just take your opponent's creatures. So now, Joe, I know you ended up playing the Bloodthrone Vampire variant.
Yes, I did.
Yep. Can you, is there a reason why? Why do you feel it's superior to the other version?
I played the Thundermaw version the night before at FNM, and I found that Thundermaw was only really good when you were flooding out and when you were behind, and even then, you didn't win most of the games that you had Thundermaw in play. So I felt like if I cut him, and then I could cut a land because I wasn't loaded up on 5-drops, I could streamline the deck a little bit more and focus more on attacking with Bloodthorn Vampire and Gravecrawler. And I wouldn't be so subjected to the flooding out draws.
Okay. I like the theory behind it of being even more aggressive than mm-hmm. being for a 5-drop. So...
Also, you're better against Thragtusk with Mark. Like, oh, you gain 5, that's cool. Take it, swing for 6, I'll have a beast. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was very annoying because I actually ended up playing 4-color Reanimator in the event.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed to land a Angel of Serenity against my Zombies opponent, removing 2 Diregraph Ghouls and a Dross Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next turn, he proceeded to play both Bloodthrone Vampire and the Mark of Mutiny, take my Angel, hit me with it for 6, and then sack it to his Bloodthrone Vampire.
Hey, quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. I answered my own question. I'm an Artard. I was about to ask why you got a beast token, and I forgot that you just sacked the Thragtusk to Bloodthrone.
Yeah.
I was just looking at the wording of Mark Immunity. I'm like, because, well, it's a red card, so I don't really play it. And it's too aggro. So it's like, I'm like, what does this do? I'm like, how does that? And I had to look up Thragtusk because I hate Thragtusk and try to take it out of my memory as much as possible. So at first I was like, how do you get a beast token? I don't understand. I'm like, doesn't leave play, but yeah. Okay. Sacking it to Bloodthrone is pretty good.
How often did you steal a Thragtusk with Mark of Mutiny without having a Bloodthrone out?
I only did it once, but I had enough pressure on board that I just killed him. But I did have to mark a Wolfier's Silverheart to break the soul bond so that I wouldn't die. And that's the only time I ever gave the creature back on the day, so...
Here, you take this. Yeah. I don't want it.
You're just feeling generous that round.
Well, I needed to not die. If he swung back with a double-striking 8-8, I was pretty dead.
Fair enough.
Okay. So I played 4-color Reanimator, like I said. And it just... My first two rounds went really well. I started off with a strong 2-0, taking both my matches 2-0. Seemed like the deck was doing really well, and then rounds 3 through 5, I just had horrible, horrible mana issues where, like, all my lands would come into play tapped, and I'd be playing, like, even further behind than my opponents playing more aggressive draws. Or I just wouldn't have the right color mana, be trying to Farseek when I really should be playing, like, a Centaur Healer or a Huntmaster to stabilize. It's just... not fun. Not fun at all. If you have sloppy draws against... Because I played against Black-Red Aggro the last two rounds of the tournament. If you stumble, they're just going to kill you.
Yep.
Yeah, I played Red, White, Blue Flash, and I was doing pretty well the opening rounds. It's kind of funny. The people in Baltimore know Darren Felton. And Joe, I'm pretty sure you know who Darren is.
Yep.
I actually got paired against him first round. Since they don't play at Legends anymore, apparently I have to keep him in check at the big tournaments. So I thought that was kind of weird. So I actually played against Black Red twice and won both my matches. I don't think I ever won a match 2-0. Because like, usually I'd win game one, and then game two, something would happen. And then game three, I end up coming back. But, like, is it Staticaster really, really helped against the Black Red, against Black Red aggro a lot. Like, there was the last Black aggro deck I played, he had Garrosh Messenger out. And in one turn, he cast both Falcon Wrath Aristocrats. And I had two Izzet Staticasters out, so he went to attack. And I'm like, all right, I'll use the first Staticaster, ping Aristocrat. And he's like, well, I'll sack the Garrosh Messenger to it. And I'm like, well, I'll ping it again. And he's like, well, I'll sack the other Falcon Wrath Aristocrat to save one. I'm like, in response, I'll flash in my third Izzet Staticaster and ping it. And in basically 3-for-1 them, but that deck red black aggro is just really really tough. Like, you know, it's got the early game. It's like, all right, I'll play, you know, 8-2 drops. I mean 8-1 drops, and then nothing turn. You know, nothing for 2 mana, and then here's Garrosh Messenger, and then like Falcon Wrath Aristocrat. Beat your face in. Like, the deck is super tough. Like, and, you know, it reminds me of just regular red black vampires back in the day. When it curves out, you just can't beat it. It doesn't matter how many Sphinxes of Revelation you draw, you're not going to be around to cast it.
Yeah, it's pretty much true. Looking at the rest of the format, it's just kind of. It seems like black red is definitely the deck to beat right now, especially if you're looking at the results from the Baltimore Open. But however, if you like the same weekend, last weekend there was the TCG Player 50K in Indy, and looking at the top eight of that, and it looks completely different. Like there's only one black red zombie deck out of the top eight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first and second place were just straight red, white, blue mid-range, which they had a bit of twist to each of them. Ryan used Bonfire of the Damned, which I've tried a couple of times, and it's been okay. And then David Bauer used, and it's a card I didn't even know existed, was Burning Oil. And that's really nice to have that flashback. So I think that's actually pretty good. And then Jerry Thompson had a red, white, blue flash. But his sideboard actually was really, really different than what he normally played. He actually had, I believe it was 3 Jace Memory Adept in the sideboard, for the control mirror. I mean, you know, that's strong. Like, I mean, Bant has to deal with it right away. And I think he had O-ring in there to deal with the detention spheres. So, you know, he took definitely a different kind of approach. I think he felt that he had a decent game against zombies already. Especially with the 4 Izzet Staticaster, and then he just needed to beef up control. And I see here that he abandoned the whole Curse of Echoes, which was cute, but not very effective.
So do you think the removal of online daily deck lists contributes to the metagame being a little bit more, I guess, underdeveloped? I don't know what to say.
I don't think so. I mean, they cut about, what, half of the dailies, I think?
What they do now is they only post the largest daily event of the day.
Okay.
So only one daily event results gets published per day. It is the largest, so you get to see the most 4-0s and 3-1s.
Okay.
But still, it's a significant amount less than what we used to see.
Yeah, but
I mean, I feel like. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's part of the reason why there's a lot of variety amongst each archetype, you know, and it's because these players have been playing these decks like themselves. Like it, you basically have to test your own deck yourself, and your testing is going to lead you to something different than somebody else's testing is going to.
But
here's the thing. Like, sorry. Like, the thing is, as you said, it leads to more diversity within the build, the tuning of the build, but I feel like it would lead to less diversity in general, number of archetypes, because, like, what I used to do, and I'm sure other people did too, was just look at all the dailies and look at like that one deck that went 3-1 one day and nobody ever played again. And then, you know, just try to make that one work. And some decks, you know, actually made it from there. And removing that feels like it might hurt the number of archetypes.
You know, honestly, I never have looked at the MTGOs for any kind of deck list, just because I've always felt that it's been, in my past experience, that the MTGO metagame is different than the physical metagame. You know, I'm not really sure why there, but like, I don't know if that's even slowed things down a lot, because you still have weekly, you know, weekly tournaments, and you know, Starseed Games still puts up all their lists for all the qualifiers that they have and stuff like that. And I think like we're still in a point where people are tired of you know, stagnant formats. So people are just now just really trying to, I think, just add fresh ideas to the metagame, and I could be completely wrong about that, but like I think some people are just tired of seeing, you know, 4 Thragtusk dot deck, you know, like and I think, you know, for, you know, a good example is the Nightshade Peddler. I think that one is a really, you know, is a really good you know, rogue deck that comes out and you know, has been tuned, and it seems to do okay, and sometimes it's just tough to deal with. So I think now it's just coming to a fact that people now aren't afraid of you know, afraid to try new things, because like, you know, with the two large North American Grand Prix just putting out black red zombies, and it just seemed to own the field. You know, and of course I think the Star City Game event is kind of, I don't want to say watered down, but I think like if you had some of those big names that played in the 50K that would probably normally play in a Star City event, I think you might see a different top 8, if that makes sense.
Yeah, my read on this is actually that you see basically the same high-speed, standard, reactionary, and almost inbreeding metagame that we're used to. Not a lot of difference, because if you look at something like Bonfire of the Damned in the list, that it looks like somebody's just, you know, being different and changing the list around, and maybe that wouldn't have happened from dailies. But the way I read that is that the two of the breakout decks from the last few GPs and that have been doing quite well online because they are sort of inexpensive and consistent are the green-white aggro decks and the zombie decks, against which Bonfire of the Damned is pretty good, especially the green-white aggro. I mean, that card is most likely in there to handle the plethora of humans. So, it looks to me like nothing has really slowed down, and this is the week-to-week standard shifting of, you know, people playing the best deck but finding a few slots to fight some of the other cards that are geared towards it and to get edges in the mirror and that kind of thing. I don't see any specific evidence that anything has actually slowed down.
Yeah, neither do I. I guess my only point was that the chance of a fringe deck getting noticed is slightly lower now.
That's true. I mean, there's actually it's popped up in a few of the daily events that you can actually look at and see. But there's a 4 or 5 color reanimator human deck that plays like Nightshade Peddlers and is it Static Casters, and then like a Gold Knight Redeemer and Unburial Rites for Angel of Glory's Rise.
And what the hell is Gold Knight Redeemer?
Is that's the gain 2 life when it enters the battlefield for each creature?
Or, I'm sorry, no. I mean Gold Knight Commander.
Oh, yes. That's Gold Knight Commander. He's the guy that gets pumps creatures on enters the battlefield, right?
Yeah, it's whenever a creature enters the battlefield, all creatures you control get +1/+1 until end of turn.
He was famous in Abyssin Restored Draft with Thatcher's Revolt because you could basically nail people for 16 with those two cards.
Yep. And so that's like a deck on Modo that's a very random archetype, and that's, you know, you would think people would play, but I guess I don't know if anybody actually played it or not. But then at the same time, like, you do have people bringing these weird random brews. Like, look at Ali Entrazi, like, you know, making top 8 with his 5-color control deck.
Yeah, but he almost made top 8 in the GP, but he flooded out hardcore in his win and in match.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like,
I wouldn't generalize too much from Ali Entrazi's performance because that's more of an indication of Ali than the format, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just saying that it is possible to brew a sort of rogue-style deck
and bring
an event.
Yeah, I don't think that fact has ever changed and will ever change.
No, not at all. Yeah, so looking at the standard results, I see them come up all the time on Twitter, people talking about like their top 5 cards for the format. And real quickly, I just want to go through what I feel like is the top 5 cards in Standard right now. And that's these are not in any specific order. So Falconwrath Aristocrat, Thrag Tusk, Sphinx's Revelation, Angel Serenity, and Farseek.
Remember that time from like ages ago that I called Sphinx's Revelation would be really good in it? Nobody believed me?
Yeah. Yeah, I really do remember that.
But not Gatecreeper Vine, sir. Not Gatecreeper Vine.
It's just waiting for its time, you know.
It's still, yeah.
That guy's an all-star in bad Golgari draft decks.
Yeah, he's actually kind of good in block, too.
I told Noyan that if he did really well in a named tournament with Gatecreeper Vine in the deck list, I would give him $100.
Yep, and yep. Since then, Noyan has not played in any events at all.
At all.
At all, yep.
He actually folded up a Gatecreeper Vine and he plays his new guitar with it like a pick. Does that count?
Okay. So I feel like that's probably enough standard discussion.
I just want to ask Joe one question. Do you what do you think is the toughest thing to do in the mirror match? Because I've heard, like, and even from Matt Pratzer, who I talk to almost on a daily basis, he came in second at GP San Antonio, and he didn't really go into a whole lot of detail. He didn't have a lot of time about how tough it is to board in the mirror. So did you find that it was very difficult to board in the mirror, to combat it, or did you just I know it goes out as opposed to what goes in. Like, did you play with numbers each time, or did you just have a set strategy that you did?
It was actually really hard to board for the mirror. The only thing that I did both times I played the mirror was I took out my Hellriders and shoved in some Nighthawks. But other than that, there wasn't much I could do. I brought in Pillars, but yeah.
Okay.
It was pretty much just trying to stick a Blood Artist before they could do anything. Once Blood Artist is in play, you pretty much can't lose the mirror.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless they pillar it immediately. You just, every time a guy dies, you gain life.
Yeah.
And guys are dying all over the place.
So. Yeah, I guess once you get the Gravecrawler engine going, you're like, yep, I'll take this, thank you.
Yep, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. The other thing that about Joe's deck that is that Joe was playing main deck Tragic Slips to combat the mirror.
Yep.
Because I remember like talking to you about it in the very beginning, like when we were talking about like, man, we should play this deck, and what do we put it in? We're like, well, Tragic Slip.
Yeah.
Did that come up in the mirror? Like, was it huge or?
It was pretty big. He was playing Pillars in the main, like most of the lists were, but I killed him with Aristocrats before he could pillar them, which is the same reason we were playing Slips, was to beat the Aristocrats, which is pretty much the only trump in the mirror. Because Hellriders not going to get through. And Hellkite's too big. The game is basically over by the time you cast him.
Okay.
So you pretty much just have to beat Aristocrat.
Yeah. Okay. So the slips were a correct call.
Yeah.
For the mirror anyway.
Yes, sir.
All right. So anybody have anything else they want to talk about in Standard before we move on to everyone's favorite format, Legacy?
Ban Thragtusk.
I'm not getting into the ban and how to fix Standard argument.
Well, the only thing I will say is the last thing I tell you, Sphinx's Revelation, it was a card that I really doubted for a long time. And then, like, you know, Sam Black came the thing of, hey, if you play it, you need to play four. You don't realize how good this card is. And then it just, like, I realized that, you know, anytime I cast, like, the second one, I knew it was game. Like, just, it's really stupid.
Okay. Yeah. So we will now switch over to Legacy, which I did not play, but I know Charles and Justin both got to play in it. Charles played High Tide, like always. So we'll start with that. Charles, you want to quickly go over your High Tide experience from the week?
Yeah, I'd rather just beat my face in. No, not really playing Legacy a whole lot. I just usually only go, like, I don't like interacting with people a whole lot. So, like, that's how I kind of feel with High Tide. Like, the only time I have to interact with you is, like, I Brain Freeze you or Blue Sun Zenith you, for the most part. But, like, you know, like, I actually, most of the time, when the rounds were over and everyone was going to time, they were waiting on me to finish. But, no, it was true. Like, I think one time, like, it was, like, 25 minutes in. Like, they're like, all right, Charles, your turn zero. Okay. Going to try to go off now. I win. But, you know, round one, I ended up playing against the High Tide Mirror, which was just really dumb. Like, game one, basically, the guy, I guess, to win the High Tide Mirror, you have to have more candelabras out than your opponent. And you've just got to have, like, you kind of play draw go for quite some time and just try to sculpt your hand with enough counter magic and just that you can fight through everything. And Flusterstorm is the key, is the way to go. It helped me win game one. Game two, I did some math wrong. And I Blue Sun Zenith him for two short. And so then EOT, he was like, EOT, I'll go ahead and Cunning Wish for Brain Freeze and kill you. I was like, well, damn. By this time, he drew his whole, you know, he drew all but two cards, so he had more counter magic than I did. I played against, some Blue White Miracle decks too. Which that just took forever and a day. Played against the Burn deck, did pretty well against that. But then I ended up playing against a black-green deck that just was pretty much hand disruption and graveyard removal. And apparently, I know this is some news to people, High Tide doesn't do so well against that. And this guy here did not play Defense Grid. So I was a very sad panda during that matchup. But not like that would matter against like Abrupt Decay once it would get rid of it. But it was, overall it was a good experience. I made some changes to High Tide, like adding Brain Freeze to the sideboard. I don't know why I didn't have it in there. And I probably would have won more matches if I had Brain Freeze. So I'm making sure that's in there for the next Legacy tournament that I play in.
I mean, my recommendation for that will be just take out everything but Force of Will and Brainstorm and play a different deck instead, probably. I mean, I love High Tide, but I feel like it's not a really good choice to play at a large tournament for a lot of reasons, including fatigue and not doing so well against odd matchups and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, Noyan. Like, it was one thing, one of the biggest things that happened a couple times against the blue-white miracles deck. Sometimes I just whiffed. Like, I would blue sun my zenith. I mean, I blue sun. Wow, I'm getting tired just even talking about high tide. No, like, I would blue sun zenith myself for like 20 or 25. And I'm like, all right, cool, I'll get everything that I need, and just like end up whiffing. So like, there were just times I'm like, they were like, how did I just win that? I'm like, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know what just happened here. Like, I blue sun myself for, you know, more cards than I can get via Sphinx's Revelation, and I still lose. Yeah, but no, I agree. Like, it's just one of those that I think High Tide can win in a tournament when no one has played it for a while, and High Tide dies yep. out. And then people just forget about it, and then it comes back in. But honestly, I think that's legacy a lot. Like, Dredge.
Yeah, but like, the thing is, like, High Tide is, I guess, like a deck where you have a high win chance against some decks and a low win chance against some decks. Whereas like Miracles, you have an average win chance against most decks or something like that.
Yeah, and I agree that like the, you know, I think Hand Disruption obviously is really tough for High Tide, but like, I know yeah. that without the Candelabra version, like I played without Candelabras in the Invitational and went 6-2, which I was like, wow. But that's because my only two bad matchups that I played were against Rug Delver, which is an auto loss. I was like, you know what? Like, I just shouldn't even bother because everything's going to get like, I'm just like, you know, I'm okay. Hopefully when I time spiral this time and I storm him out, he doesn't have Stifle in hand. Oh, look,
yeah.
He does.
Yeah, that's
and what yeah. else?
I hate to break it to you, but if your deck is an auto loss to Rug Delver, I wouldn't even bother going to an SCG event.
Yeah, I mean, like, playing deck like, I guess niche is the word, but I don't know. Playing decks like that at events with 8 rounds or so was just statistically not very solid, you know, because one lose and you're already in a really bad spot.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing about the, you know, the Candelabra version actually makes it easier to win because you can actually win a turn earlier, more consistently than you do without it. But it still can be it's
sorry.
So rough.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean,
and there's also the other factor of like fatigue, where your rounds last forever and you just want to kill yourself, and there's no time to like go to the bathroom and like get something to eat, and you just
oh. Absolutely. I'm like, you know, me being fat anyway, like, I have to eat, like, every 5 minutes. And so it's like, I'm like, all right, cool. I won the first game in 15 minutes. Sweet. If I win the next one in 15, I still have 20 minutes to eat. All of a sudden, time in the round. Wait, but it's still the second game. I haven't won yet. Damn it. So, but yeah, no, I, like, next time I play an SCG event, I'm probably going to play, Esper Stoneblade, and this is where I'll transition now, or even Bug, which, will, you know, we will refer to the Master, for all Bug purposes.
The Master, sure.
The Master, yeah, so, yeah. The sort of, it seems the breakout deck for this event was a Bug, basically, of different variations, and you know, and Justin actually ended up playing Bug.
So I think leading up to this, there was some indication that there would be a resurgence of Bug because the Standstill variants had done, you know, had I think what, two top eights in a row, maybe. But the interesting thing about this event was there was quite a bit of Bug in the top tables, and I think in the room in general, but very little of the Standstill variant. And one of the things that I did that I think a lot of other people did as well is whenever the Standstill variant of the deck is good, the Snapcaster version becomes better, actually. Because you know you get basically the cards you want as opposed to just, you know, a certain number of cards, and the ability to put extra pressure on the table in response to a standstill is pretty reasonable. So kind of going into it, you know, I played a version that runs Snapcasters instead of standstill, and that was, you know, pretty popular. I think a lot of people hit on that general thing. But I mean, the real reason that Bug is doing well is because it has two of what I think right now are the best cards in the format, and they're both new, and they both fit perfectly into that deck. And, you know, one is Deathrite Shaman, and the other is Abrupt Decay. And Deathrite Shaman is like 17 cards in one card that only costs one mana. Because it's like, I'm dead serious, right? It's basically, in Legacy, it's basically Birds of Paradise, Grim Lavamancer, some life gain and incidental graveyard hate for one mana. Also, that one mana buys you the ability to block Goblin Lackey profitably, you know, and a host of other things as well, right? So, I mean, it's just this like Swiss Army knife creature, except unlike a Swiss Army knife, it's actually really good at everything it does. So, I mean, that card is fabulous. And whether you're in a controlling situation or under a standstill or anything like that, just having the ability to slowly eat a graveyard and kill someone off is pretty fabulous. And then on the other side, Abrupt Decay in Legacy hits a very large number of cards, and it's quite good against even like Rug Delver decks and things like that, where they're trying to protect Delvers and Tarmogoyfs, you know, these cheap creatures. Unfortunately, it doesn't hit Nimble Mongoose. You know, Wizards isn't that nice to us, but it's, you know, very, very inexpensive, fits into the color scheme well. And I think the reason that we saw Bug Delver do quite well is because it's, you know, well set up to beat up on the same decks that Rug Delver beats up on. But in the mirror, they have this uncounterable ability to kill most of the opponent's threats, whereas the Rug Delver deck, you know, is relying on the counter spells to prevent them from sticking or trying to play the attrition game. So that seemed to be, I think, a trend we saw, is just that Bug Delver, when Delver is good, is the better of the two Delver decks if you run into the mirror. And, you know, the room was just completely chock full of Rug Delver, as always.
I mean, I've always been a fan of Bug over Rug, but you probably know that, Justin. But, I guess it was never, like, it didn't really have the tools it needed when I was still on that train. And now with Abrupt Decay and Deathrite Shaman, it has actually the tools to compete and even beat Rug.
Yeah, so, I think that's true. I think, and Deathrite Shaman is great, but I think it's really Abrupt Decay. Just because of the ability to answer, you know, a huge percentage of every permanent played in Legacy. With, you know, dodging some of the most prevalent cards in the format, like Force of Will, Daze, Spell Pierce, Spell Snare, all that kind of stuff, right? Like, this is sort of a joke, but, you know, I'm wondering if Autumn's Veil is actually a decent card now. because, you know, it gives you the ability to play other uncounterable spells in a cheap deck, and it is one of the, you know, few cards that can actually stop in a
Okay. If Bug Delver becomes like the new Rug Delver and is played everywhere, I'm sure someone's going to play Autumn's Veil in the sideboard.
Yeah, I mean, I played it in my Prost Bloom deck, but that was
do tell that story, please.
That was a joke. Oh, you didn't hear about this?
I know, but like, I'm sure the other people.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll shorthand it real quick. I didn't want to derail us, but yeah, I played a Legacy challenge in DC with Prosperous Bloom. Which I made slight modernizations, including four copies of Explore and a Banefire Kill. And it was a complete joke. Round one, I beat Combo Elves because he killed himself game one. And then in game two, I managed to double engineered explosives away his board, giving me the approximately 47 turns I needed to set up my combo and kill him. And then, I narrowly lost to an Esper Stoneblade player. And I would have killed him, but he eventually realized that Gemstone Mine was my only source of red for Banefire, and he extirpated it while I was going off.
Right.
So if he hadn't realized that, I probably would have nuked him. And that made me regret playing duels over City of Brass, but it was fine all the other times. And then in the final round, I got to play against my friend and teammate Jorge Chang, and he was playing Athens Blue, which is really fun because Energy Field just, you know, doesn't do anything against Banefire, go figure. And Counterbalance is pretty bad when all of your combo pieces are 5 and 6 mana. So we just played this stupid attrition game where he has the countertop lock and Energy Field out, and I'm just, you know, jamming Natural Balance until it sticks. So I ended up going 2-2 with this just miserable 8-turn-8 combo deck that has no ability to protect itself through counters or discards. And I won the best booster pack of my entire life. And I wrote an article about it full of wry humor and jokes on Legit, if anybody wants to read it. It's called Long Shot, which is a...
Yep, I love it.
A double entendre. anyway. Yeah. Oh, and
you should have had the bloom in your lap.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you have it in your lap?
No. Yeah, I referenced that in the article. I was like, you know, this deck is a lot harder to play when you don't get to keep extra cards lying around.
Well, you know the screwed up part about that, though, was like, he was 11-0. And I'm like, you're 11-0. You don't need to cheat in order to go 12-0.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. We're going way off topic here, but I'm from like Long Hall of Fame. And I think what a lot of people focus on the cheating and stuff, and sure, but a lot of the time he wasn't cheating because he was just good enough.
Yeah, yep. No. I absolutely agree with that. Like, I think Mike Long was the first antagonist of Magic. And you know, but he actually had a game to back it up.
Yeah.
And you know, like he was a good player. I played against him multiple times. You know, it you know, as much as they talk about that, and then Pro Tour LA of 99, and stuff like that. But you know, he's a good player. Like there was no, I never doubted his ability whatsoever.
Yeah, I think our current crop of bad guys are really sort of disappointing from a showmanship standpoint.
Like, yeah, they don't talk crap or anything like that. He would just trash you. He would trash talk you.
Yeah, well, and he was pretty exciting to watch, even when you knew he was scumbagging people. But you know, the last few batches of people banned, it's just you watch him play, and you're just like, I actually want to destroy my computer screen.
Like, you know, like the old Kira great glass spinner trick.
Yeah, right. But anyway, so. So that's enough about Autumn's Veil, but so I played a fairly stock list of bug control with Snapcasters, but I played 3 Abrupt Decay in the main deck and played obviously 4 copies of Deathrite Shaman, and so I didn't do very well, unfortunately, and it was, you know, mostly, I think, luck of the draw. Jason was able to talk me off a cliff when I thought I was playing terribly by saying that I was doing it well. But I played a deck that was fairly close, although a different sideboard to the one that Brian Bronduin played, actually. We were comparing notes ahead of time on, like, mana base and everything, and that was very similar. But... he was a little bit more on discard in the main deck, which I think turned out to be quite good there. He got third place with bug control, and there were a couple bug delver decks up there as well. But I lasted 5 rounds, partly through a combination of too many losses, and I'm very introverted, so... After that many rounds of a tournament like that, even if I'm potentially still in contention for money, I'm usually too fried to keep going. So not helped by the amount of times I played High Tide. But Yeah, my experience was I played against Rug Delver, then High Tide, then Rug Delver, then High Tide, then Bug Delver. So it was kind of like a standard event, basically, in Legacy form. But, yeah, I went the first round against Rug Delver. I very narrowly lost in extra turns on a time extension in game three because my opponent opened the round with a trip to the restroom. He basically said he wasn't going to make it through the match otherwise, so the judge allowed that. But I drew three lands in a row at the end when I just basically needed removal. I had like 17 live cards and 30 cards in the deck or something and just got fetches, but that happens. And then I played High Tide and again lost a close one in turns of game three. It came down to he had to spiral, I think, a second time, and I just needed to be spiraled into any of the four forces and blue cards, and, you know, the hand came up without any forces, so lost that one. Then I played Rug Delver again. I 2-0'd him just really easily. And then I played High Tide again, 2-0'd that guy really easily. And then I lost to Bug Delver in turn three, or in game three. I don't remember if it was extra turns or not, but same thing, basically needed to draw removal or Snapcasters or any of the Planeswalkers or Engineered Explosives, I think, and drew two or three land in a row, I don't remember. So came out on the bad side of that. But the Deathrite Shamans were an all-star, and I wanted to comment on the incidental graveyard hate aspect. The Delver decks can put enough pressure and fill up the yard while, you know, disrupting your mana base enough that you don't have a lot of time unless you're winning anyways to do things like shrink Goyfs and turn off Threshold on Mongooses. So if you're ahead, the Deathrite Shaman makes it very hard for them to catch back up. But if you're behind, you usually just don't have the mana to spend to get back there. But I found out that it was surprisingly effective in the High Tide match. Because basically while they're setting up to go off, if you have an active Deathrite Shaman, you can eat cards from the yard that they have to use to go off that are critical for them to draw, after they've spiraled. So you're basically reducing the likelihood of them getting a workable hand after they refuel. So that was pretty cool. So I quickly got into this mode of, if they play out a High Tide or something like that, eat the High Tide as early as possible or when they start to time spiral. So it's less likely that they can generate sufficient mana on the go around. And I almost got one guy by, he brain freezed me, and then, you know, I tried to talk him into passing the turn so I would die on the upkeep, knowing full well that I had Academy Ruins out and he had milled and engineered explosives. But, but he caught it and blue sunned me. And the other High Tide players, game one, he went off. I think I ate some High Tides before he spiraled. And he ended up fizzling after that. And he said, "I thought you would scoop." And I said, "No. I've been doing the math. I'll sit it out."
I mean, that's one thing, though. A lot of people just don't know how to play against High Tide. And I get that because, like, it's the worst deck to test against. But still, I guess you can't really understand what makes it tick unless you play the deck. But, like, I just, like, whenever I see High Tide on camera, the other guy, and whenever another guy, like the guy who's not playing High Tide does anything, I'm like, no, don't do that. You have to counter that spell, or like you have to stop him from doing this.
Yeah, and, you know. Yeah, yeah. I think the reason that I kind of knew what I was doing there is, you know, I played the deck like a few times, not enough to really know it, but it still functions on the same core principles that Solidarity and Palancron Tide and Dream Halls and all that stuff operated on. So a lot of the, like, the key cards and, like, how to make it unlikely that they can profitably execute the combo after spiraling is kind of the same as it was in the 90s, really. So I was relying on that quite a bit, I think. But the other thing that really put away the 2-0 match against High Tide was post-board I threw into hand with two Raven's Crime. I flooded out, which is fantastic in that situation.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so I managed to get two Deathrite Shamans down and just crime his hand to death. So he was stuck in the position of, you know, he was cantripping a lot and stuff, but he was passing the turn for about four or five turns in a row with just one card in hand, which is not a situation you want to be in with that deck. I mean, you can get very lucky and draw out of it. So, you know, I was quite afraid to blink, but managed to get there. And the good thing in that case is, you know, I can cast my Raven's Crime off lands that he's discarding using the Deathrite Shaman. So I'm, you know, not using, so I'm not actually relying on the lands I draw to play the Raven's Crime. You know, so I'm pitching the lands to the Raven's Crime because I can use the mana out of the graveyard, basically. So even without Life from the Loam in hand, I was able to keep the crime rate up, if you will.
Nice.
I wasn't actually setting that up. I just thought of that. So that's like another testament to the power of Deathrite Shaman there, where I was basically pretending like I had a Loam, cheating on mana, Raven's Criming him, and then converting it into a clock when his hand was empty enough that he, you know, obviously couldn't go for it. So that card is just fabulous. And an interesting thing about Deathrite Shaman as well is I think graveyard hate in sideboards is decreasing overall because of the value of the incidental main deck hate. So it's possible that this might lead to an opening for decks that can do a lot with the graveyard but aren't completely reliant on it, like Dredge, to get a lot of value because the more hardcore graveyard hate, like Leyline of the Void and, you know, Surgical Extractions and things like that, dials down a bit because people are, you know, claiming extra sideboard slots and leaning on Deathrite Shaman really hard. So I'm looking to see how that kind of turns out. But I crushed Jorge 2-0 at the end of a draft, so that was my victory for the weekend. And then I rare drafted the crap out of my free draft and came out quite a bit ahead. And I managed to complete my playset of Bayous, and I was going over to sell binder chaff to Star City Games, and a guy was just standing there holding a single Underground Sea and nothing else. And I said, "What are you doing with that?" He said, "Well, I'm going to sell it." And I said, "Oh, trade it to me." He said, "Okay, let me see what you have." So he ended up wanting a Savannah and two Bitter Blossom, and I only had one Bitter Blossom. So he just stood around while I sold cards to Star City. And among the credit, I bought another Bitter Blossom and picked that up. So I was able to complete my set of Bayous and Underground Seas on the weekend, too, which was pretty sweet. So
it's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it was like total luck of the draw, but... Yeah.
By the way, since I mentioned it, I guess pro tip for defeating the High Tide deck, there is one card that you really need to counter, and the name of the card is High Tide.
No, I don't know if that's necessary. Like, dude, I guess it depends.
Well, if you can't resolve the High Tide, what does the deck do?
Yeah, the deck is completely reliant on Tide and Spiral. Period. Well, the Tide is what gives you the mana to compensate if you lose the Spiral.
But, well, I mean, I think to an extent, yeah. But, like, you know, if the problem, though, is if I know I'm playing against a permission deck, I don't, you know, I'll play with two or – I'll wait until I get two or three high in the deck. I mean, in the hand. And then
– Yeah.
And then just try to go.
This is like – that's like the, I guess, level two thought process, but like I'm talking about like the level zero, level one thought process where you just counter High Tide. Like I've seen so many instances of this happen on camera where like the guy is just like High Tide and like he's gonna die next turn and the other guy has a counter spell in hand and he just doesn't counter the High Tide and like,
yeah,
no.
People think you hold it for like time spirals or kill conditions like a Blue Sun Zenith or whatever, but yeah, I mean, if you don't know what you're doing in that match and you're not comfortable with it, you attempt to counter every High Tide you see.
Okay, I agree with that statement.
Yeah. I think I get what you're saying too. I think it's, you know, it's a bit different, but like once you get to the point of realizing that like turnabouting their land off in the mirror at the end of their turn mm-hmm. before you try to go off is a slick move.
Yep.
You've graduated beyond snap counter the high tide, but yeah. If you're still in grade school, you want to snap counter the high tide because that is the linchpin. Like, Candelabra sucks without it. Turnabout mm-hmm. sucks without
everything
it.
Everything in the deck sucks without
it. Yeah, everything. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. Like, I am – because, like, usually what I'll do is I'll waste the first turnabout to tap you out. You know, because if you're playing blue, I do not want you to have any blue mana open whatsoever. And, you know, at that point, if I have to, you know, if I've got to waste that turnabout there and then hopefully, you know, time spiral into something juicy, you know, I'll do that. But, like, tapping a blue player out is really of the utmost importance for me. And, like, what I saw people do was I would bait them with a turnabout. And they're like, oh, well, I got to counter that. I'm like, okay, cool. Combo? Thank you.
Yeah, I want somebody to bait me with a turnabout and ignore my Deathrite Shamans. That's what I want.
No, yeah, I mean, honestly, when Deathrite Shaman first came out, like, I dismissed the card. Well, one, obviously, because it's green.
It's but not green. That's a lie.
That's true. We determined that it was a blue card. But you know, it really it's much stronger than I ever thought it could be. Once I actually read the card, I'm like, oh, you can actually, you know, get land out of your graveyard. It was funny, the very first time I was practicing against Deathrite Shaman, I thought scoured my opponent, and they proceeded to go turn to Garros Messenger. I'm like, oh, that's awkward.
Yeah, I think the, like, because this kind of happened, I was talking to BBD early on, and I was like, hey, Deathrite Shaman is, you know, the real deal. And he's like, eh, you know, and then it turns out that we neglected to mention that I was talking about Legacy and he was talking about Standard, which is totally different.
Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, from an Eternal perspective, the card is an insane powerhouse, basically because of fetch lands, which everyone knows. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I caught onto it pretty early because I did a Golgari pre-release draft, and I had a game where I killed a Selesnya Populate deck by doing 24 damage with a single Deathrite Shaman, and that woke me up to the possibilities. He was like, he kept populating with like Rootborn Defenses and stuff, and I'm like, yep, damage. So yeah, I think that card is amazing, and it's surprisingly tricky to deal with because. You know, if it gets active, it's very easy to get value out of it, even if removal is used on it. But, it's just this, like, 1-2 that does a bunch of stuff, but it's not the linchpin of anything. So another thing I think is really good about the Bug Delver deck is, you know, you feel like you need your removal for, like, Goyfs and Tombstalkers and Bobs and stuff. So you kind of have to ignore this Deathrite Shaman, which is just getting insane incremental value over time. So it's almost like overloading the cheap end of removal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that card is really good, and Bug is definitely positioned to make a comeback and, like, be a really good deck.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely proved its worth in Baltimore for sure. I definitely will be dusting off my Bayous and playing Tarmogoyf. But as you and I, Justin, also discussed, Tarmogoyf is not green as well.
Right. Yeah. all these sweet green cards are unfortunately not green.
Yep. So, yeah.
I want to mention one other deck that plays Abrupt Decay, and this is more of a shout-out than anything. This is for my buddy Brian, who played in the Legacy Open this weekend. He actually played Black-Green Pox.
Nice.
And he basically played Black-Green Pox because as soon as Abrupt Decay was spoiled, all he could do was talk about how he was going to play it in Pox.
But it doesn't destroy lands.
No, it does not destroy lands. But it destroys everything else.
Yeah, I was going to say, everything else in the deck destroys lands and land. He just wants to kill a creature.
So, yeah, he played Black Green Pox. Now, the real reason why I got to shout him out is because actually placed 33rd. He missed 32nd by like 0.4% tiebreakers. But he was playing Overgrown Tombs instead of Bayous because he doesn't actually own any Bayous.
Oh, yeah. This sucks. I remember this story.
Yeah. So, you know, he unfortunately lost a game that he probably could have won if the Bayou had, or if Overgrown Tomb had been a Bayou. But, you know, he still made 33rd, which is pretty sweet. Like, that's awesome. We were joking the entire time, though, that, like, if he had made top 8 with Shocklands in his deck instead of actual dual lands, that, you know, like, maybe Star City just, like, wouldn't let him play. Like, you can't let people know that they can play Shocklands instead of
dual lands. Hashtag MTG finance. Shocklands are blowing up.
Get you, yeah, all of a sudden, Overgrown Tomb will be $50 now.
Yeah. But, yeah, so congrats to him on breaking top 64.
Yep.
With his, which is pretty much like Pox for him is pretty much a pet deck. So.
But also, congrats to him for, like, life tilting Edgar Flores.
Yeah.
What?
He played Edgar round, I think it was round 5?
Yeah, round 5.
Yeah, it was round 5. They were both 3-1. And he played against Edgar and played Overgrown Tomb and then, like, just, you know...
Took him apart.
Yeah, just does what Pox does. And I guess the other thing that he did against Edgar that he... This is, like, when he realized that he could do it, was he played Engineered Plague, naming Wizard. And, of course, like, Flores is playing, like, his, like, sort of Esper Fae Wizard deck.
Yeah.
Type thing, yeah.
But yeah, basically, like every click in Snapcaster died on impact.
Yep.
Yeah. He still gets the triggers though, right?
Yeah, he still gets the triggers, but you know the guys are gone, which is
yeah, they don't
win.
Yeah. That's
yeah, not 2-for-1s anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, discard is awesome against Pox, right?
Yeah.
can I Inquisition your? Can I Inquisition your glasses off your face? I mean,
yeah.
Can I get any value out of this card?
Yeah, pretty much.
I see a shift deck in the top 16 with Thraktusk in it. Have you guys seen that?
Is it the Scapeshift?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Thraktusk.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love Scapeshift. But I don't believe that a deck like this can make 12th place and like, a deck an open where people play XUG decks.
Yeah, I mean this is basically the Nykvit deck that Caleb did well with. Right? I mean it's a variation on that strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's basically exploiting the non basic mana base by Cabal Therapy pulled to death with Veteran Explorer out. Yeah, and then it's just going completely over the top.
I get. Then they should have just called it Scapeshift. It doesn't really look like a Scapeshift deck, I guess.
No.
There's like 2 Scapeshifts in it. Just call it like Nykvit and Scapeshift. I don't know what it's called.
Or don't call it Nykvit. But
call it Nykvit.
Scapeshift is just the incidental kill condition that it uses because it has a lot of land.
Like Jason's Nykshift idea.
Nykshift?
Yeah.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Actually, the deck that I find surprising is the 14th place deck played by Kenny Mayer is Jund. Like, how often do you see Jund in Legacy?
Welcome to the randomness. Hold on a second. Are we sure?
I'll tell you the answer. 4 Death Ray Shaman, 4 Abrupt Decay.
Yep.
And 4 Bloodbraid Elf on top of it.
Yeah, but this looks like it's like a legacy deck, except for Scavenger.
You mean a modern deck?
A modern deck, yeah.
This is basically Jund Delver, where instead of Delver, it's casting. No, I'm dead serious. Look at the list. It's Jund Delver, and instead of Delver, it's casting Bloodbraid Elf, and instead of cheap counters, it's using cheap hand disruption. It's otherwise the same shell, right? Shamans, yep. Confidants, Goyfs, Oozes, Decay, Bolt. Hand disruption, cheap planeswalkers. Yeah. I mean, Jund Delver.
Yep. And it's playing Dete to capitalize on attacking with mans.
Yeah, Death Road Shaman is another fun one with Jitte, because if it ever gets outclassed or the graveyards are eaten, it's just another thing that you can put counters on the Jitte with. So it's like, I mean, because Birds of Paradise swings for zero, right? But Death Raid Shaman swings for one, so it can actually load that bad boy up.
Yeah, it can.
Yep.
Just Blood Braid Elf was just sick.
Oh, man. I want to play that now, just so I can Blood Braid Elf into Jitte.
He was playing Blood Braid Elf in the Battle of Wits Zoo deck.
Yeah.
So that's probably where that idea came from. But Bloodbraid Elf is another card where if you can fetch up enough basics early on to get past the Stifle and Wasteland action, it in a match against a Delver deck, the Bloodbraid Elf is actually a pretty fantastic card.
Yep. Well, Cascade can be stifled though, right?
Yeah, but then they're for one with the Cascade and still fighting a 3/2 haste. So, yeah.
But other than that, the Legacy Open looked pretty normal.
I haven't seen a Dredge deck in a while.
Yeah, and that's why you see Dredge now, is because you haven't seen one in a while, so the hate's kind of gone.
Well,
that's right, Chomp, though.
Yeah. Damon plays Dredge, one, very well, and two, very frequently. So you often see him in the top 8 or top 16 of Baltimore or D.C. area stuff. So... like, he got 13th place in this one. You can attribute that, you know, partially to Dredge, and I think you can attribute that in a large way to it being Damon. So,
yeah, I know those guys who play Dredge at every single event, no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, he can play other stuff for sure, and I've definitely seen him do it and played.
Yeah, of course. Like,
but yeah,
you know the type of guy I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, he's quite good with it for sure.
I think doesn't Ando play Dredge most of the time?
I don't know who that is. Sorry.
He's a player around the Baltimore area. He's deaf.
He plays Dredge. I think most of the times I've played against him, he's either playing Dredge or sometimes I've played against him with Death and Taxes, I think.
Okay.
That's another one he likes.
Gotcha. Yeah. Like,
you're not dredging, you're casting Jotun Grunt, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Opposites attract.
Do we have any other comments on Legacy?
Yeah.
One day I'm going to live my dream of playing lands and go like 1-0 every round.
Oh, no. Can I tell you about the new dream with lands, Noyan? I hate to spoil.
Yeah, sure. What is it?
Okay. So the next incarnation of the lands deck, in my opinion, is going to cast Cavern of Souls. Or it's going to lay down a Cavern of Souls and name Vampire.
Casting what?
A Hexmage.
Wow.
No. I'm only partially trolling you. Actually, you name Shaman because you can do Deathrite Shaman and you can do Vampire Hexmage. But I really want to do Black-Green Lands with Crop Rotation into Dark Depths.
No.
No, you know why?
Why?
Because Bug Delver and Rug Delver have absolutely no way to stop a Merit Lage token.
Stifle, though.
Well, yeah, I mean...
or Abrupt Decay.
You're playing tons of discard. No, the token's
indestructible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bolt doesn't do anything. Decay doesn't do anything.
Oh, and it's, I guess it can't be submerged because it's not green. Ruh-roh.
Well, you can submerge if there's a forest out, so you have to watch out for...
Actually, Stifle isn't that good either, because even if you... wait, let me check. There was something with Dark Depths and Stifle.
You can Stifle the Vampire, and then the Dark Depths is still there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but if you Stifle the Dark Depths, it's gone, right? Wait, can you Stifle... there was some weird interaction with Stifle and Dark Depths that I'm not remembering right now.
Fair enough. I'm only half joking, but I like the fact that there's a black-green deck where you have all these weird creatures that are all actually good in some way and all just happen to be shamans.
The Stifle Dark Depths thing comes from the way Dark Depths is actually worded. Dark Depths specifically says when it has no ice counters on it, sacrifice it. If you do, put the token into play. So if you just stifle it, they just don't sacrifice it.
Right.
Well, because they can't, because when Dark Depths comes into play with the counter, so it's not a triggered ability.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, and like even
and
if
also
you stifle
it, yeah, it's still there and it still has no counter, so the next time a state based effects are checked, it still triggers.
Yep.
I think.
Yes, that is correct. So it basically you can't stifle it.
Right. Yeah, you have to stifle the Hexmage, which usually isn't terribly exciting.
Nope, not.
Especially in a black green deck that has a million ways to get it back.
Recurring Nightmare.
And worst case, you just pay for the Dark Depths. I mean, at that point, you're probably better off just winning the game, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the deck I'm talking about, right, is by that point has, like, tons of Maze of Ifs out and has, you know, like, deeds and everything. So, yeah, this is my new pet project, just so we're all clear.
Keep me updated on how this goes, but I hate you. I do have a Merit Lage token, though, if you need one.
Oh, probably, yes. I couldn't bring myself to spend $8 for a Merit Lage token.
See, that's what you're lacking. You need the dedication to spend that money on the token. If you don't spend the money on the token, you're not deserving of the deck.
I have the dedication to Sharpie draw a Merit Lage on a blank card from an old championship deck, sir.
Fair enough.
Sharpie Merit Lage onto a Black Lotus.
It'll be Merit Noyan if I have to. Frozen under the ice, clutching your guitar.
Speaking of Black Lotuses, I'm going to move away.
Sweet segue.
Yeah. I'm going to move away from
Legacy
and talk a little bit about Modo, because some of us, i.e. Justin, knowing a little bit, you know, actually play Modo. And Wizards announced that the Holiday Cube is going to be a Power Cube. And along with this announcement, announced that sometime in 2013, Power and other vintage staples will be coming to Modo.
Wow.
What does "will be coming" mean, though? They'll be put
in like a Master's Edition or something.
Yeah, or something.
Because, like, how are they going to keep the value? Like, I mean, it doesn't matter in real life, but, like, they would still want to keep those cards valuable, right? How are they going to do that?
I mean, the same way they did with, like, the Master's Editions. Like, that's why dual lands aren't, like, super expensive right now. It's just because they're printed in the Master Editions that could just be drafted, and, you know, it wasn't super hard to get some. And
right. I mean, they're basically reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but isn't Force of Will like $100 on there?
Force of Will was like $120, I think, and is now down to just over $100. And it dropped $20 with like there being a week of Master Edition drafts.
Right, but it'll climb back up, especially if they don't do more Master's Edition drafts with Force of Will and Power shows up.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that when Power shows up, they're just going to, you know, Force of Wills will be in the Master Edition that Power is in, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Or it will be a draft with, like, Masters 1, Masters 2.
Yeah, that kind of thing. You know, just some way of getting more Force of Wills into the format.
Right.
That's pretty much the only thing right now that either Vintage or Legacy would be missing is Force of Wills.
I was going to say, I'll 100% be trying to play Vintage on Magic Online if it's fully powered.
Yeah, if it's not just Classic and it's actual Vintage, I will definitely
play. That would be so good. Yeah, I would definitely play it too.
It would be a renaissance.
I was saying, they should print the anti-cards on Magic Online.
Anti-League Online?
Yes. It would be like playing PvP and Ultima Online.
I have no idea what that means.
You use, like, MS Paint to draw on their cards when you win an anti-league?
PvP in Ultima Online means in Ultima Online, when someone kills you, they could just take all your gear.
Yeah.
Iron Man anti.
Right.
Yep.
So I don't think that Wizards of the Coast wants to have to develop the AI technology to detect a penis drawing. Because every time somebody plays Armada Worm, the thing will have a false positive.
It's true. But, yeah, so that was my other little bit of news, was Vintage may actually become a full-fledged format on Modo. And if that's the case, I will be playing a lot of Vintage on Modo.
I had just deleted Modo for space on my computer like 2 days ago. I guess I'll have to reinstall it.
You got till, you know, when they officially announce that they're going to be releasing them and how they're doing it. But, yeah. So, that's a little bit of news.
Legit is stocked up with some Vintage staples on Magic Online. Ready to roll.
Yeah. That was my little bit of Magic news. Anybody have anything else from Magical related that we'd like to discuss before we wrap it up for tonight?
I'll probably wait till next week for my news.
Okay.
We can chat about that a little later.
Yeah, see if we can come up with something better than just blurting it.
Yep, very true.
So yeah, so we have something to release to the public, but we're going to hold off on that till next week, it looks like. Or the next recording, anyway. With that, I would like to thank Justin and Joe for being on with us tonight.
Yep, thanks, guys.
No problem. Thank
you. We should be back regularly. I already said that. The one thing I forgot to say in the beginning of the cast is that we actually have sweet new intro music that you heard at the very beginning of the cast. The sweet intro music was from Noyan's band Carthage. And I'm going to put the full track at the very end of this episode so that you can listen to the whole thing if you really want to. Noyan plugged Carthage's, Bandcamp? Is that what you guys use?
Yeah, it's carthageband.bandcamp.com. Our full-length album is coming out on the 11th of December. Yay!
Yeah, I can't wait.
Sweet.
So check them out. Until next time, guys.